Sabbath day greetings on the first Sabbath in the Roman calendar year of 2014. Oh, time marches on, time goes by quickly in one sense, and in another sense that, you know, sometimes time seems to drag, but then you look at it and the days and the weeks and the months seem to go by fairly quickly. And here it is, 2014, as man counts time. I remember the big hubbubaloo over the year 2000 and all the computer issues that they thought we might have, and that went smoothly. That's 14 years ago. 14 years ago. And then all the other events that have happened in the various churches of God, and many, many years ago, many, many years have gone by. And here we are. Those of us here in our 60s, we've got children that are starting to hit 40, and we never anticipated that time would go on this long before the second coming of Jesus Christ. We thought that would come sooner, but it hasn't. And we don't know how much longer we have to go. We have to patiently endure. Today we're going to have our Bible study format and continue in the book of Deuteronomy. We will cover two chapters, chapters 2 and 3. We're only going to cover the first couple of chapters, the first four chapters and a couple verses in chapter 5. And then we're going to cover the last couple of chapters, chapters 5 through 26 are the statutes, the laws, and the judgments of God. And we're not going to go through those, not that that would be wrong, of course, but trying to get the historical flow of the Old Testament and the lessons that we can learn from that. We always need to remember what the Apostle Paul wrote in, is that 1st or 2nd Corinthians? Seems like 2 Corinthians 10:4, where he said, "All these things are recorded as examples unto us, that we should learn from them, and not do as our forefathers did, not make the same mistakes that our forefathers made." And that's the whole purpose of the book of Deuteronomy. And that's the point that I'm trying to emphasize, is why Moses wrote this book. Now, he was inspired to write this book, of course. But the reason that he wrote this book during the last month of his life was to tell the second generation of Israelites from the Exodus, obey God. Don't make the same mistakes that your parents made in rebelling against God. And as we'll see in this chapter, and next time we go through the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 4, he even emphasizes, don't make the same mistake I made. So this is, it's a spiritual message to the children of Israel, obey God. Don't rebel. Don't make the same. Learn from the mistakes that I made and the mistakes your parents made, because they didn't get to go into the promised land, and neither am I. I'm not permitted to go into the promised land because of a mistake I made. And so Moses wants to warn them. He wants to help them. He doesn't want them to make the same mistakes. And yet, as we'll see at the end of the book in the prophecies, he knows they will. He knows they will. And even in the fifth chapter, verse 29, God says, "I know these people don't have the heart to obey me." So that's the purpose of this book. And, of course, that applies to you and me. We need to learn from the mistakes that Israel made. You know, they rebelled. They weren't satisfied with what God gave them. They murmured. They complained. They lusted. you know, they committed religious idolatry and physical idolatry and you know, and fornication and adultery at times. And they worshipped other gods. They got involved with the Moabite women at the prodding of Balaam, who rode the donkey that talked to him, and all those other episodes that we've read through. And God was angry with the Israelites for their 40 years of rebellion. And they didn't go into the promised land. All right, so again, Moses is reviewing, you know, the first couple of chapters. He reviews the history. And so we're going to review that quickly. And then he reviews the laws of God. He repeats the Ten Commandments in the fifth chapter. And he goes through a lot of other diverse laws, statutes, and judgments. And then at the end of the book, you know, he tells them, God has set before you life and death. Choose life. Choose life. All right, chapter 2. Then we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea, as the Lord spake unto me, and compassed around Seir many days. In chapter 1, we reviewed the first couple months, you know, when they got to Mount Sinai, and then they spied out the land, and they rebelled against God and said, you know, we'll be slaughtered if we go in to the land of Canaan, after they got the report from the spies. And they said, we'd been better off to go back to Egypt. And then some of them, and then God said, you're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And some of them said, oh, we don't want to do that. We now realize we should go in and conquer the land of Canaan. And God said, no. I said, no, now. Don't do it, or you'll die. And many of them were killed in battle. And so we pick up the story here after that. And verse 2, and the Lord spake unto me, saying, you have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn you northward. Okay, well, between verses 1 and 2, 38 years go by. We skip over 38 years, as we'll read here in a couple verses. You have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn you northward. And command you the people, saying, you are to pass through the coast of your brethren, the children of Esau, which dwell in Seir, and they shall be afraid of you. Take you good heed unto yourselves, therefore. Meddle not with them, for I will not give you of their land, no, not so much as a foot breadth, because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. You know, Esau, the brother of Jacob, and they lived south and east of the Dead Sea. Their border went almost straight east from the southern end of the Dead Sea, and almost straight south from the southern end of the Dead Sea, and lived in that area. You shall buy meat of them for money, that you may eat, and you shall also buy water of them for money, that you may drink. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the works of your hand. He knows you're walking through the great wilderness these 40 years. The Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. Now, 40 years is, I think, a summary. I think at this point, they'd spent a year at Mount Sinai, where they got the Ten Commandments, so most likely on the day of Pentecost. And then they spent like 9 months building the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. So they were at Mount Sinai for like a year, and then they wandered in the wilderness for like 38 years. And then it took them like a year to travel from the Arabian Peninsula north of the Red Sea up the east side of the Dead Sea and the east side of the Jordan River. That took them almost a year, maybe a little less than a year, before then they actually crossed the Jordan River. And in the number of years from when they left Egypt till they actually crossed the Jordan River is 40 years. They lacked nothing. They were still getting manna. The manna did not stop coming down every morning, except the Sabbath day, until they crossed the Jordan River. That's when it stopped. So they were still getting manna to eat, but God said they were not. They were permitted to buy food and water from the children of Esau. And they had money. You know, they still had money from when they left Egypt 39 years ago or so. You know, they took wages. They took the spoil. They spoiled the Egyptians. And so they still had this gold and silver and other, you know, precious gems and other things that they could, maybe even Egyptian coins that they could trade for meat and money from Esau. But they weren't to get in, you know, they were to be nice to the Edomites. They weren't to trouble them or cause any problems that might result in a skirmish or a battle or anything like that. Verse 8, and when we passed by from our children, our brethren, the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, through the way of the plain from Elath and from Ezon Geber, we turned and passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab. It seems like the Israelites didn't necessarily go through the land of Esau, but maybe they skirted the border of Esau, the eastern border of Esau. Or maybe there might have been a main road that they, I guess the Edomites permitted them to go through their land or the outskirts of their border. And I guess they worked everything out where they had at least a semi-friendly relationship. And then above the Edomites is the land of Moab. And the border of Moab, you know, is obviously north of Edom. So the border of Moab, the Red Sea was on the west, and their border, their southern border, was a line drawn east from the southern tip of the Dead Sea to about the middle of the Dead Sea. Right in the middle of the Dead Sea, which goes north-south, if you draw a line at the middle of the Dead Sea eastward, that's the northern border of Moab. And the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give you of the land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. Yeah, I was listening to Hal Lindsey, and he says the Jews are the only ones where God has given them a land deed. Well, he forgot about this here. Yes, God has given the Israelites, not just the Jews, the deed to the land of Canaan, the land of Palestine, the land of Judea. God has given that to the children of Jacob for an inheritance forever. And the land east of that, God has given. It's recorded here in the Bible. He's given part of it to the children of Esau, and part of it to the children of Lot, you know, Abraham's nephew, the Moabites. Verse 10, the Emims dwelt therein in times past, people of great and many and tall as the Anakims. So they were giants, which are also were accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites call them Emims. Okay, in other translations, let's see, verses 10 through 12 is a parenthetical expression. This explanation that we're reading in verses 10, 11, and 12 is a, like a footnote that apparently was added, by Ezra when they canonized most of the Old Testament to kind of explain, to add an explanatory note to what Moses had written to make it clear to the people that were reading it at the time of Ezra. Verse 12, the Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead, as Israel did unto the land of his possessions which the Lord gave unto them. Notice how that's like past tense. And just as the Israelite destroyed the inhabitants in the land of Canaan, so the Edomites destroyed the inhabitants that used to dwell in the land south and east of the Dead Sea that they now inhabit. Verse 13 then, continues with the words of Moses. Now rise up, said I, and get you over the brook, either Moses or God, Zered. And we went over the brook Zered. And the space in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we were come over the brook Zered was 38 years. I think it's 38 years, not from the Exodus, but 38 years from when they started wandering in the wilderness, 38 years after they left Mount Sinai, I think, is what that means. Until all the generation, 38 years after they sent the spies into the land of Canaan and rebelled against God, and God said a total of 40 years. Again, that was they'd spent over a year at camping out at Mount Sinai. Until all the generation of men of war were washed or wasted out from among the host, as the Lord swore unto them. For indeed the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from among the host until they were consumed. Moses is emphasizing certain points here. All your parents are dead. Every one of them, 20 years older, died in the wilderness because they didn't believe that God could give them the land of Canaan. So it came to pass when all the men of war were consumed and dead from among the people that the Lord spake unto me, saying, you are to pass over through Ar, the coast of Moab, this day. Now, the coast of Moab. They didn't go through the middle of Moab. They went on the eastern border of Moab. And when you come nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give unto you the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. Then again, verses 20 through 23 is a parenthetical expression, probably added at the time of Ezra. That also was accounted the land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites called them Zumans, or whatever, a people great and many, as tall as the Anakins. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. As he did to the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, when he destroyed the Horims from before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead, even unto this day. And the Avims, which dwelt in Hazarim, even unto Azareth, and Kaphatorims, which come forth of Kaphor, destroyed them and dwelt in their stead. Okay, into the parenthetical explanation added later. Verse 24, rise up, you, take your journey and pass over the river Arnon. Behold, I have given unto your hand Shihon, the Amorite king of Heshbon, in his land, began to possess it and contend with him in battle. Okay, this is the land, again, east of the Dead Sea and east of the Jordan River, beginning halfway up the Dead Sea and northward. And this is the land, as we'll read, that was eventually given to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. This day will I begin to put the dread of you and the fear of you upon the nations that are under the whole heaven, who shall hear report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. And I sent messengers out of the wilderness of Kedemoth unto Shihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, let me pass through your land. I will go along the highway. I will neither turn unto the right hand nor to the left. You shall sell me meat for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only I will pass through on my feet. Now, notice God said, you're going to fight with this king, and I'm going to give you the victory over the king. But Moses still sent him a message of peace. We still have to, Moses still had to do the right thing. Even though God said, you're going to end up fighting with this king, and I will give you the victory over him and destroy his, these people, Moses still made overtures of peace. And, we have to do the right thing. We have to try to be peaceful. Even when we know it won't work out sometimes. We can't use that as an excuse not to do the right thing, to try to have peace, to show love and consideration, to try to work things out. We still have to try to work things out the right way, the godly way, even if we know they won't. And that's what Moses did. So he sent this king a message of peace. But verse 29 is also a parenthetical expression. Let's see, how long does that continue? As the children of Esau which dwelt in Seir, and the Moabites which dwelt in Ar, did unto me. Oh, that's the end of parenthetical expression. Maybe that's a parenthetical expression by Moses this time. Until I shall pass over Jordan into the land which the Lord our God has given us. Yeah, I think that is. Moses is saying, the same way I went through the land of Esau and the land of Moab, and I didn't fight with them, and I gave them money for food and water, I want to do the same thing with you. But Shihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him, for the Lord your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him unto your hand, as appears this day. Then the Lord said unto me, behold, I have begun to give Shihon and his land before you. Begin to possess, that you may inherit his land. Then Shihon came out against us, he and all his people, to fight at Jahaz. And the Lord our God delivered him before us, and we smote him and his sons and all his people. And we took all his cities at that time, and utterly destroyed the men and the women, and the little ones of every city. And we left none to remain. Every man, woman, and child was killed. And we might think that's cruel. And it is harsh. Definitely. That's harsh. But that was God's decision, not Moses. And the Amorites were one of the seven nations who were devoted to destruction. They were a warlike people, a very, what would be a good word? They were a very destructive people, wanting to fight, and, they didn't get along with other people, but they were just a warlike people. And a very, of course, pagan people, who were living miserable lives in the eyes of God, worshiping false gods, kind of like you think of Sodom and Gomorrah. And this was, in one sense, I guess, in Deuteronomy 3 and verse 6, the word for destroy has some type of a connotation of a holy war. But here the Israelites were given a holy decree by God to destroy all of these people in war, men, women, and children. And there was a reason for that. And, you know, in Genesis 15, 16, God told, who was in Genesis, Abraham or Lot? It must have been Abraham or Isaac, that the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet full. So, you know, God waited several hundred years till the iniquity, the evilness of the Amorites had come to a full, and then he wanted them wiped out. And one of the main reasons he wanted them wiped out was because of their pagan religion. He didn't want the Israelites to be influenced by the religious practices of the Amorites. Remember the problems that Balaam had caused in getting the Moabite women to influence the Israelites to worship false gods. Let's turn quickly to Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 16. Similar situation, Deuteronomy 7 and verse 16. God says, and you shall consume all the people which the Lord your God shall deliver you. He's talking about when Israel, you know, crossed over the Jordan and all of the people that lived in Canaan. Your eyes shall have no pity upon them, neither shall you serve their gods, for that will be a snare unto you. So, you know, that was the reason God wanted them destroyed. Men, women, and children. It was because he wanted their religious practices to come to an end and not be a snare unto the children of Israel. They only did this with the people that lived in the land that they were to possess. Deuteronomy 20 and chapter 14, which we won't read. But it says, you know, God says, when you fight against cities that are far away, only destroy the men. You can have the women and the children as your slaves. But, you know, that was the rule for cities that were not to become the inheritance and the land possessions of the Israelites. The cities that the Israelites were to inherit, men, women, and children, were to be destroyed. That was the will of God, as harsh as that is. They were never going to obey God. They were never going to have the opportunity to be in the first resurrection. They'll have their opportunity later. So in that sense, what difference does it make? You know, I know that I'm being a little cavalier, a little trite in saying, but in the eyes of God, it didn't make any difference, you know, what age they died at. They're not going to be in the first resurrection. They were just going to cause problems for the Israelites. So he wanted the Israelites to get rid of them. And they'll have their opportunity in the future. All right, continuing then, in verse 35, only the cattle we took for a prey unto ourselves, and the spoil of the cities which we took, from Arior, which is by the brink of the river of Arnon, and from the city that is by the river even unto Gilead, the famous city of Gilead. And it's not only a city, but I guess a territory. There was not one city too strong for us. The Lord our God delivered all unto us. Only unto the land of the children of Ammon you came not, nor unto any place of the river of Jabbok, nor unto the cities and the mountains, nor unto whatsoever the Lord our God forbade us. Okay, moving along to chapter 3. Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto me, Fear him not, for I will deliver him and all his people and his land unto your hand, and you shall do unto him as you did unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, and which dwelt in Heshbon. So the Lord our God delivered unto our hands Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people, and we smote him until none was left to him remaining. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we took not from them. 60 cities, 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og and Bashan. All these cities were fenced with high walls, gates and bars, besides unwalled towns, a great many. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did unto Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and the children of every city. But all the cattle and the spoil of the cities we took for a prey to ourselves. And we took at that time one of the hand of the two kings of the Amorites, the land that was on this side Jordan, from the river of Arnon unto Mount Hermon, which Hermon, here's another parenthetical expression, which Hermon the Sidonians call Shurion, and the Amorites call it Shinar. So he lists the cities, verse 10, verse 11, for only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. It is not in Rabath of the children of, is it not in Rabath of the children of Ammon? So it was kept like a museum piece. 9 cubits was the length thereof, that's 13 feet, and 4 cubits the breadth of it, after the cubit of a man. So his bed was 6 feet wide and 13 feet long. Big man. And this land which we possessed at that time from Arior, which is by the river Arnon, and half Mount Gilead, and the cities thereof gave I unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites. And the rest of Gilead, and all Bashan, being the kingdom of Og, gave I unto the half-tribe of Manasseh, all the region of Argoth, with all Bashan, which was called the land of the giants. And then it talks about Jared possessed some of the land, verse 14. Verse 15, Micah got Gilead. And then it talks, verse 16, the Reubenites and to the Gadites, they got Gilead from, it kind of lists the territories. Verse 18, and I commanded you at that time, saying, The Lord your God has given you this land to possess it. You shall pass over armed before your brethren, the children of Israel, all that are meet for the war. But your wives and your little ones and your cattle, for I know that you have much cattle, shall abide in your cities until I have given, which I have given you. And, you know, this is a summary. We read about this before. The Reubenites, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh said this is a good land for cattle, and we've got a lot of cattle. We'd like to have our inheritance here instead of on the west side of Jordan. God talked to Moses, or Moses talked to God, or asked God, and God said, okay. And they said, as long as the men who are able to fight go fight with their brethren to conquer the land of Canaan, that'll be okay. Until the Lord has given rest unto your brethren, as well as unto you, and until they also possess the land which the Lord your God has given them beyond Jordan, and then shall you return every man unto his possession which I have given you. And I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, Your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done unto these two kings. So shall the Lord do unto the kingdoms whither you pass. So Moses was encouraging Joshua, you know, after I'm dead, and you go over to the land of Canaan, just as God helped us defeat these two kings on the east side of the Jordan. God will help you defeat the kings on the west side of Jordan. You shall not fear them, for the Lord your God, he shall fight for you. You know, we need to remember that too. We have our battles, spiritual battles, physical battles, emotional battles. We're not fighting with knives and swords and guns or things like that, but we have our battles, even with internal battles within our own lives as we struggle in this world to survive physically and spiritually, and the difficulties that we face, even though we have many blessings in the land of the blessings that God promised unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel. We still have battles, and we need to remember God fights for us. God fights for you, and God fights for me. If we obey God and love God, if we trust in God to fight our battles for us, to help us. And I besought the Lord at that time, saying, now here's the main lesson in the last couple verses as we conclude that Moses wants to make here before we get into chapter 4. O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness in the mighty hand. You know, we're finally starting to destroy some of the people of the land that you're going to give us to inherit, what you promised us 40 years ago. For which God is there in heaven or in earth that can do according to your works and according to your might? I pray you, let me go over and see the good land which is beyond Jordan, that godly mountain in Lebanon. But the Lord was wroth with me for your sakes, and would not hear me. Yeah. Notice how Moses phrases that. God was angry at me because of you Israelites. You Israelites made me sin. Because you Israelites rebelled against God and I got upset, I sinned. You know, so is Moses saying it was all their fault? No, not entirely. But he says, God would not hear me. And the Lord said unto me, let it be suffice you, speak no more of me of this matter. Now, again, why is Moses bringing this up? Well, Moses is going to mention this episode in his life, where he disobeyed God, or displeased God, disobeyed and displeased God, he and Aaron, and neither he nor Aaron nor Miriam were allowed to go into the Promised Land. God would have allowed them to go into the Promised Land if they hadn't made this mistake, along with Joshua and Caleb. What is it that made God so angry with Moses, or displeased with Moses, for this one episode? You know, God forgave Moses, but God said, Moses, you still have to pay a penalty. Is it because Moses hit the rock instead of speaking to it? No, that's not it. Moses mentions this again in chapter 4, verse 21, so we'll read that next time. So he mentions it here in chapter 3, he mentions it in chapter 4, verse 21, and he will mention it again in Deuteronomy chapter 32. And he also mentions it in Numbers 27 and verse 14. We may read that. So let's turn to Numbers 20. What upset God so much? Let's turn to Numbers 20 quickly. Numbers 20, verses 10 through 12. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, you rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? Okay, that's the big mistake Moses made right there. Not that he hit the rock. God told him to talk to the rock, yes. And Moses in his anger forgot the instructions God gave him. But the main mistake that Moses made was he said, must we? You know, must Aaron and I fetch you water out of this rock? Moses got angry. He lost his temper. And he didn't give the credit and the glory for the miracle to God. He took it unto himself. That's why God was upset, as we will read. And then it goes on to say, Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and water came out abundantly. You know, God still did a miracle and caused water to come out of the rock, but he was upset. Notice verse 12. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because you believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of Israel, of the children of Israel. You know, that was the reason. Because you didn't give the glory unto me. You took it unto yourselves. You did not glorify me in the eyes of the Israelites when you said, must we bring water out of this rock? You know, Moses got so used to doing miracles and that God always did what he wanted. What did he do? He slipped. Did he get to thinking, I can do this? Well, probably not, but, you know, it might seem like a small mistake, but it was a big mistake. Because you did not sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. So, you know, I think of this scripture. I think about what happened to Moses. You know, here we are, Christians. Here I am, a minister, preaching the truth. I want to be protected. I want to be in the place of safety. I want my family. I want my brother and his family. You know, I want my sister and her family. And yet, our children are diverse in their religious practices. And I have to trust God. I can't do anything. But I also think I don't want to make a mistake and lose out being protected, going to the place of safety. And you and I, we can do good. We can preach the truth. We can teach our children the right ways. We can be a good example. And yet, we can still make a mistake, like Moses did, that can cost us. That can cost us dearly what we want to achieve. So, there's the warning message. Be careful. And so, what was Moses' purpose in mentioning this several times in the book of Deuteronomy? Was it to complain to the Israelites, you know, you made me sin, it's all your fault, and because of that I don't get to go into the land of Palestine? No, I don't think that was Moses' motivation. As I said at the beginning, I think the motivation of Moses was learn from my mistake. Don't make the same mistake I made. Don't make the same mistake your parents made. Honor God. Give God the credit and the glory. Worship and obey Him. Because if you slip up, even one time, it can cost you dearly. Verse 27. God continues with Moses, get you up unto the top of Pisgah, and lift up your eyes westward and northward and southward and eastward, and behold it with your eyes, for you shall not go over this Jordan. But charge Joshua, and encourage him, and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you shall see. So we bode in the valley over against Beth Peor. Okay, then the chapter 4 is kind of like the meat there. It summarizes very strongly the whole purpose of this book, and we'll cover that the next time. But again, let us remember the purpose for the book of Deuteronomy. And as the Apostle Paul said, let us read and learn from it and profit from it and examine ourselves not to make the mistakes that they did, but to worship God with a willing heart, an obedient heart, with patience, and we'll get to see protection during the difficult times ahead. And then, you know, Moses will make it into the spiritual promised land, but he wasn't allowed to go into the physical promised land. But we can have both. We can have both if we love and obey God with all our heart and all our might.